Welcome to Ampersound, a podcast brought to you by the team at Visualist. Ampersound features snippets from our interactive digital magazine, Ampersand. Every episode, we speak to multi-hyphenates who have captivated our minds. We ask them about their code switching, routines, and mindsets. For the full stories, check out ampersand-mag.com. That's ampersand-mag.com. Don't forget to like, follow, and subscribe. Today, I'm chatting with lawyer, beauty entrepreneur, and beekeeper, Zephryn O'Sullivan. We talk about picking up new hobbies, owning new stories, and the lessons she's learned from her children. Stay tuned to hear more, and we hope you enjoy the stories. I always like to start by going back to the beginning, kind of what life like was for you growing up. Where did you grow up? And, you know, what were some of the things you wanted to be as you were growing up?
Yeah, so I grew up in London. My parents are from Bangladesh. And, you know, growing up, I was very creative. So I spent a lot of time reading and writing. I knew I wanted to maybe study English literature. I hadn't necessarily thought about a career in law. But then equally, I didn't come from a family where pursuing anything creative was no one knew anything about it. It was very high risk, especially first generation coming to the UK. I don't think that they were strict in saying don't pursue anything creative, but I didn't necessarily feel confident or inspired enough that I could make a success of it. So I did English literature at university and I loved it. You know, storytelling at the heart of everything I really love, you know, and what do we learn about ourselves and the world through the stories we tell. But I also knew that I was thinking, you know, what's a good job to do? You know, I'm quite cerebral and I thought law looked like a good thing to go into. And, you know, I studied hard and I got a great job in a law firm. But what I hadn't appreciated is, you know, what does it mean to have a good cultural fit, you know, for yourself? You know, like, you know, you become so obsessed with having a job because you have no skills when you come out of university, but actually you don't have a sense of what does it mean for you in the long term. But I was very fortunate because I knew I wanted to be in media. So I then ended up in television. So being surrounded by lots of creative people, it seemed like the perfect fit for me.
You mentioned a cultural fit for yourself. What does that mean?
Yeah, so I think it's not a static thing. You know, what cultural fit means for you is constantly evolving because you're not the same person year on year. I would say in my 20s, what I hadn't realized is that I really like to be around people that are maybe a little kind of kooky or weirder in their thinking or different. They maybe didn't all go to the best universities in the world and come out with this same degree, living in the same area, wearing an expensive, you know, suit or whatever. They just might be different, come from different backgrounds, ages, races. And I think the city has changed since when I started out 20 years ago as a young lawyer, but I felt it was quite stifling for me as a person. And I'm lucky to have left the city law firm environment to go in-house. In-house suits me perfectly because it's full of people in a business from all walks of life doing different jobs. And I like that range of skills, I think. But I mean, you know, cultural fit is different. It's whether it's space to be yourself and turn up to work and feel that you're you, space to say what you think, you know, maybe, you know, just even how an office is designed. What does it mean to be, you know, open plan? What does it mean to have plants or whatever in the office? Sometimes older institutions don't think about that.
I think I saw on one of your Instagram posts that you wanted to be a textile artist at some point. How did that come about?
So, I mean, I'm quite a visual person and I had, you know, spent all my childhood and, you know, as a young adult, so making things with my hands. And the good thing is I remember, you know, you do GCSEs and, you know, academics were very important to my family. So, you know, you studied for them, you delivered your exams, and then it came to choosing A-levels. And I really wanted to do art. And art is an incredible subject. But at the time, people were like, is that academic? You know, are you going to go and be a lawyer? Are you going to be a doctor? Are you going to, you know, all these weird things that they list off. But there was two subjects I really wanted to do, English and art. And I, you know, I did art at A-level. And I just found this mixed media of textiles and fabric and, you know, design just so utterly pleasing and absorbing. And I thought, wow, this could be a really cool thing to do. I think it was quite fleeting because the reality is, I think had I pursued it, I don't think I would have found enduring interest in it. I think I enjoyed the hobby of it, and the I enjoyed doing something with my hands and the making and the pleasure of it. But actually, I think one of the things I've learned as I've got older, you know, sometimes we mistake what we find pleasure in as hobbies as feeling we need to either monetize it or do something more with it or become a genius at it instead of just saying, oh, wow, I just really like this and this is great. You know, that's all I need to be able to do with it. It doesn't need to become something.
Is beekeeping a hobby for you?
Yeah, is it a hobby? Is it a lifestyle? Yes, so I took up beekeeping. So, you know, going back to talking about, you know, who are our friends and who are the people we hang out with? You know, one thing that always freaked me out is the idea that I would have lots of people that are the same, you know, like they were all left wing Guardian readers, in kind of digital echo chamber. Everyone earns a certain amount or lives in a certain house. Like things like that worry me because, you know, how do you challenge who you are and your perceptions of things? And I just had my second child, so I've got three children, and I was feeling a little bit lost, and I knew I wanted to sort of take up a hobby or just something to think about, you know, that wasn't just worrying about things. And I took up beekeeping because I had a honey blog, writing about honey. And you know, when you join a beekeeping association, you meet different people. You know, I'd never met like an 86-year-old ex, you know, retired civil engineer who maybe voted in a different way to me. But you know, you can form friendships and mentorships and relationships with different types of people. Beekeeping in London is very diverse. It's very exciting. You know, you rely on a community to, you know, look at whether it's disease management or what's happening with your hive or your queen or, you know, your something swarming. It's a community-based activity. It gives me such pleasure. It's completely different to everything I do. Even though you need to read, you know, I read a lot of books. I'm like, what shall I do here? You can't rely on it. You have to just be in your bee suit going, okay, what's going on? And I love it. They surprise me. Taught me to stop and look at the flowers, to look at how something so precious can be built out of, you know, visiting, you know, nectar, how pollination works, how to be still. It's had a profound impact on me, you know, in a way that, you know, I didn't know before I took it up.
Wow. You mentioned that you had a honey blog, hence you decided to take up beekeeping. How did a honey blog come about in the first place?
It's a really random thing, and it's going to sound really like I wanted to run a business after my second baby, or I knew I wanted to have a side hustle of some kind, but I didn't know what it would be. And I said, well, you know what? I need to just write about something and get it out because everyone always thinks it's going to be like the whole world's going to read my blog. No, no one will read your blog. Two people will read your blog, you know, you and your mom, you know. And so you need to get over the fear of just putting stuff out there. You know, what does a website look like? How do you write content? How do you get on social media? How to, you know, build something, you know. And I was making pancakes. It's 2015. And I was putting honey on the pancakes. So I was like, well, you know, I love honey. So you know, I'm not going to obsess over what this blog should be about. I'm going to write about honey. I'm going to write everything there is about honey, types of honey, monofloral honey, where it comes from the world, what how bees make it, what it tastes like, how to cook with it, how to use it in beauty products. You know, it's a totally basic blog, but it doesn't matter. It's like getting your first novel out of your system. You know, you just have to get it out of you. And it's not always, you know, for some people, it's not always the best, you know, thing. But I love it. You know, it was good. I met lots of people, had a lot of fun along the way doing it.
Amazing. How do you think you've cultivated that mindset of you just have to get on with it and just try things and see how that goes? Do you think it's innate, or do you think it's something that you've cultivated along the way, or through your childhood, or through the jobs that you've had as a lawyer, etc.?
I think a lot of things held me back. So I'd say 20 to 30, I was full of anxiety. You know, things had to be perfect. Things weren't working out. I wasn't, you know, not what isn't working out, you know, like what does that even mean, you know? But one thing that has always been a good thing is failing. And what I mean by failing isn't really failing. It's like just trying stuff and it not working out because the more you get over feeling embarrassed, most of my inhibitions have been about embarrassment. How will I look in the eyes of others? And that is so paralyzing. But when you stop caring because stuff doesn't work out, like most of my stuff doesn't work out. And now I'm like, yeah, okay. I mean, I care I have a less gung-ho approach when I'm advising, obviously, my clients in a legal capacity because they are relying on me to have done all of the thinking, but I mean in my personal life. And also, I think there's one thing that really weighs on my mind is that our life is very, very short and very, very fragile. And so I always think, what if this was my last 5 years of my life? What if this was the last year of my life? You know, you don't have time to waste. You don't have the luxury of trying to discover who you are when you're, I don't want to discover who I am when I'm 70. I want to discover who I am like every day, and not care so much. And you know, I tend to approach life as like, you know, why not? Why not have a go? And I think the more you do that, the more you're trying stuff, it's not working out, or you like, I've done loads of stuff where people are like, why are you doing it? Like, I've done acting classes or mosaic classes or sculpture classes or, you know, like weird, like, you know, stuff where people are like, I don't understand the logic of it, but it doesn't need to make sense. It's only when you're trying to backfill the logic of why you've done anything, you get stressed out because you're like, oh, I need to explain why I've done this. You know, like if I did that, I would never have launched a skincare brand. People would have been like, but you're a lawyer, you know, like explain to me, how do you become like a beauty entrepreneur? That doesn't seem like that there's no story there, but it doesn't, I don't need to explain it for anyone else. It is, you know, it's a story we've kind of I've discovered along the way. So I think we just need to enjoy learning stuff. Some of the things I try out are not like for the end result. You know, it's not like, oh, because if I do this and this and this, this will happen. Sometimes it's literally just like, if I do this, maybe I'll enjoy it.
So much to unpack there. So you have a very keen sense of self-awareness about what makes you tick, what gets you inspired or what gets you motivated. You've got so many things going on. Do you ever feel overwhelmed or uninspired in, your beauty business or being a mom or having all these multiple projects? And what do you do if you do feel overwhelmed or out of time?
No, yeah, I only have three projects that matter. Everything else can come or go, you know. So family first, you know, my priority is my kids, my family, my well-being. To be honest, yeah, I'm squeezed for time for sure. But there is no doubt in my mind the hierarchy of what's important. So even though I might be busy, it may I give off all the noises of things of like, my focus is, there's never any doubt in my mind, my kids first, my family first, my mom and dad, or my husband, or me, or, you know, I will take the time to go for a walk on a Saturday morning, even if I'm stressed a little bit because I think, oh, I got loads of stuff I wanted to do for the business, because that's important for our kids. And then two, you know, like the day job and the night job, you know, they're like two kids I love, you know. People, there's no, it's not like, oh, I love Five Dot and I don't love law, or I love law and Five Dot's just a, you know, a hobby. They coexist, and I put tons of energy into both of them. I think overwhelm, yes, but you know, I suppose there'll be a stage where I don't have the energy to work. I work very, very hard. I think, yeah, it does ebb and flow. Maybe I do have days where I'm like, oh, why, you know, why have I put a side hustle on top of like three kids? I just finished mat leave and a busy job, and you know, but then equally, I think, well, I don't know. Yeah, I mean, I do need to look after my health for sure. Yeah.
What do you do to for self-care to when you need to relax or when you what gets you in the flow? Do you, for instance, have music that you listen to or have a journaling habit?
I mean, I did beekeeping. I mean, you're forced to really be in the moment. It's winter now, so I'm, you know, I've packed them all off. I'm hoping they'll all be all right for the winter. My kids are a great distraction. There's nothing like children who are like, we want to play. Put your
How
friends
old
on. They're 1, 5, and 7.
are they?
They're little. It's a young family. And you know, my 5-year-old, particularly, to be a 5-year-old boy who is not interested in you not being present and immersing yourself in a game, you know, like, why would you want to be anywhere else other than in our imaginary game? And there was a really great TED TED talk by Shonda Rhimes, you know, the showrunner for Grey's Anatomy, who I adore. And she had it, I think she had like some kind of, not quite a breakdown, but she had a year of saying yes to her kids. And every time they say, "Mom, we want to play," and she'd be like, "Okay." Whereas she's all her life been like, "No, I'm busy." And that always, that was, it's funny how you get a snippet of wisdom from somebody else that sticks in your mind, you know. And I think that that was one of the things. And then, you know, I think skincare has become self-care. It's just part of taking time just out for yourself. I'm not a big beauty ritualist, so it's not like, oh, spend 2 hours doing like all this stuff, but even just being mindful when you put on your face mask or take your makeup off, and you know, just getting outdoors, having a walk, you know.
So Five Dot, I would love to talk about that. You are coming at it as a so-called beauty outsider. I noticed that you've used that term quite a bit in when describing Five Dot. What is it like being a beauty outsider? And you know, you mentioned earlier that you don't, sometimes when you do something, it's not because you want to achieve something, it's not because of the outcome. For Five Dot, how is that, how does that statement apply or not apply?
Oh yeah, no, so like, you know, it took me a long time to accept being a beauty outsider is where I'm comfortable. I was on Sephora Accelerate this year. And actually, it was one of the trainings I had, like on feedback on our brand, where somebody said, it's okay, you know, you're a beauty outsider. That's fine. That's part of your story. Because, you know, part of us is like, a part of me was really super shy about it because I was like, why would anyone be interested in our products? Which are radically like minimal, totally free. Saying, look, the industry is using too much stuff. Why would they believe our products could be effective, even though we use like an amazing cosmetic formulator behind us? And she was like, but people are going to trust you. They're going to trust you because you're asking the question why, you know, and that's okay. With Five Dot, you know, I want to grow a sustainable business for sure. And it's about challenging the norms about how many ingredients we've got in our products. And I think it is okay to be an outsider. It's a little bit like admitting that fashion, when I grew up, fashion and beauty wasn't for people like me. No one looked like me on any magazine. And that's okay. You know, there's a gang of people. I don't want to sell to everybody. I only want to sell to a tribe of people who get what we're about. And all the people who are in our gang who buy from us, you know, they're super, you know, interested in the idea of minimalism, the luxury of less. Whether or not, they're not always beauty junkies, but they want healthy skin. They care about their health. And people like the fact we're just saying something different in beauty. You know, we write about stuff that's not about like how to be perfect, how to have perfect glass skin. We're like, actually, you know, what does it mean to overconsume? Or what does it mean to have a product that can be used by a 25-year-old and a 55-year-old woman? You know, like, what, you know, do we just ask them different questions?
What has building this beauty business taught you about yourself and your identity?
That the outsiders are really the insiders, you know, like that, who is outside of what? Outside of what? You know, we create a sense of what something is. Like, so I say I'm a beauty outsider, but I am the beauty industry, you know, in the same way that like someone would be like, your parents are from Bangladesh, are you really British? No, I am Britain. You know, like, it's about like owning that space. I also think that there's a new conversation to be had around, you know, things becoming much more holistic. Everything's become interconnected. You know, we lived in a world where like, you're in beauty, you're in this, you're in that, you're a lawyer, you do that law job for like 50 years, and this is beauty, and it only circumvents this little space. And now we're like in a world where like, beauty is health. What does health mean? Health is wellness and well-being. What does wellness mean? That's a holistic thing. And so you can't be a brand now without asking. And then but every brand has to be sustainable because the earth is on fire. And so, and then what does it mean to be a good business? Because people don't want to just trade cash for a commodity. So, you know, the conversation has become bigger. And as a founder-led brand, you know, it's really exciting because we're really close to that. As we scale, we have to keep that personality and feeling of like connectedness to those issues, I think. So
I want to know when you work on Five Dot, because you have a day job. I know you're on maternity leave, so you start at Five Dot, or you launched it whilst on maternity.
I launched it a year ago when I was pregnant.
Okay.
Everyone laughs because they think I just had this, like, because there's like a 5-year age gap. I need a 5-year age gap between my last and this one. And everyone's like, did you just have a baby so you could work on your business? I bet you the high to heavy strategy. So when I had the idea for five dot, I was just doing my day job. And actually launching a business, like getting stuff together, it doesn't all happen at once. You know, like not a continuous stream of stuff. You're like, one day you're like, oh, I was setting up a website. One day you're like, okay, someone's working on something. It's going to take them 2 months before they come back to you on anything. But before, your idea of how business will operate is that you think it's all going to happen every single day. But actually, I spent like 90% of my time waiting. Everyone says to me, like, how do you make the time? But I don't spend more time than anyone else who's watching television on Word.com. So I just traded out doing something else for working on my project. There is no magic to it. And also I'm very, very disciplined. So, you know, there's always a list. I know what the three things are I need to do. I don't always get them done, but I'm very, very clear what we need to do.
How did you cultivate that disciplined mentality?
I mean, it's hard to say how people get disciplined. I suppose my background as a lawyer makes me very disciplined. I think it would be hard to divorce my day job from all this, because you bring all your day job to your side hustle. Sometimes that's really good. Like, so just like I've got discipline, I've got focus, and I have the unknown problems. Sometimes it's bad because my background holds us back. You know, whether it's, you know, people be like, I'm not sure, you know, I might be too risk averse. And I'm not risk averse with five dot, but occasionally, like, I think we've got some braver things we want to say, and I see them written down. I'm like, oh, you know, can we just stick, you know, like, you know, I don't know, that feels a bit like, you know, and so we're testing them. Well, I'm always A/B testing, like, does it resonate with people or not? And I would say that's where the interference of a different skill set isn't good, but I'm aware of it. I'm aware that I can hold things back by not feeling, you know, not having the clarity to look at it with a slightly different hat on.
You're context switching and code switching when you're, you know, going between your day job and your side hustle or your night job, as you, depending on how you call it. Do these ever get confusing for you?
No, not really, because they're enriching each other. So like, I think if I was like, I'm just trying to think, like a composer or something, like something radically different outside of work, which I couldn't bring to work, that would be hard. But at work, they all know I have like this other affair with my side hustle. My side hustle, everyone knows I'm a lawyer. And they each enrich the other because they're sort of making you better at your job across. I probably think the five dots made me stronger in my day job, because things that held me back about confidence or, you know, making decisions or talking up, I've had to exercise that skill constantly in my own business because I am the business owner. I'm paying for whatever it is that's happening. And I can see in my day job, I've become like, things that used to bother me have become less of it because I've exercised that skill outside of work in other contexts.
What do your three children teach you?
To be in the moment and have fun. For sure. So Noah, my middle child, is like, there's no time to waste. You just have to have the fun now. And if it didn't work out, we forget about it. Don't worry about it. You know. And then my elder, she thinks she's gonna be not quite entrepreneurial, but she's taught me a lot about being careful with words. So she's very thoughtful, introverted character. You know, you say what you mean, or you not saying what you mean. You know, so what is your tone? So sometimes she might hear passive aggression where it sounds like this, and she's not interested in not understanding. What do we really mean to say to each other here? Are you cross? Are you unsure? You sound angry. You know, and it's quite, you know, because sometimes as a parent you're like a bit passive aggressive because you're like, oh, you know, I need to get this done. So she's taught me about what it means to be careful with words and say what you mean. I think I do that anyway, but she means don't fob us off, you know, with stuff. And then my youngest, he's a baby, and he's just reminded me that nothing of any value can be bought. So the only things that matter is, you know, and, you know, bear in mind as adults, we don't have lots of physical connection, even more so with COVID. The need for touch, you know, so I've been holding a baby and stroking a baby, and it's not about having children, because I think you can get it from dogs, your friends, your, you know, your partner, but it's this sense of we need each other physically and in the moment in a way that is so much more important than all this is all great, you know, you've got a career, you're doing this stuff, you're putting, you know, making all this is really irrelevant, you know, if your life is not full of relationships or love, really not, no point in being alive, really. COVID has taught us, you know, in your darkest hour, who will come and drop food at your door and check you're okay? If you can't count people on a hand, you've got a problem, you know, like how deep are our relationships? So the youngest has taught me the need for, you know, real connection, you know.
Yeah, that's really lovely. And I loved hearing about your seven-year-old as well and the introspection there. That's amazing. You mentioned early on in our chat that one of the things that you were worried about when you first started with beekeeping was having friends that look all the same or, you know, have the same values and mentalities and all that. Fast forward to today, is that still something that is present in your mind, or is that now negated by all these other life experiences that you've had?
No, it's always on my mind. And even, you know, it comes up in my day job as well. You know, how are we recruiting diversely, broadly, differently? Are we challenging our unconscious bias? Mm. All the time. Sometimes, you know, it's not every single day, but we've never been more aware of the prejudices or things that we might hold unwittingly. And that's one thing. And then the other is that now as a business owner, I really get what they mean by having different types of people, mm-hmm. further than having lots of the same type of people. I have Brian or our designer or our investor, like, or our cosmetic formulator is the most crazy different bunch of people. We share the same values, though, I have to say. We're different, but we do underneath it share the same value or the same vision. And I can see the benefit of it. That used to would have stressed me out before. I'd be like, no, I just want everyone to be nodding and, you know, like we're all in agreement. No one agrees on anything, but it's good. I can have much better discussions where we don't agree. And that's great. Whereas I would have taken it much more personally a few years ago.
Interesting. Okay. We'll want to finish off with this quick fire section where I just say something and I just love to hear kind of the first things that come to mind or, you know, your just very succinct views on the topic. The first one is parenting.
Oh, joyful. Yeah, chaos and joy. You know, mm-hmm. all the ones. And, you know, none of us have a book about how to do it. I think, you know, I think it's super important that we, you know, understand ourselves before we parent kids. We can pass down a lot of things we don't mean to about our own upbringing if we don't reflect on the things we liked or didn't like about how we are. You just find a default that ends up you find going, ah, oh my god, I hated that, but actually now I've become my parent. Also, I think it's you know, I think you have to give a, you have to be selfless. There's no space for putting yourself first when you have children. You have to put them first and you have to make the space for them. And I, you know, and love them. Love them and let them know they're loved.
Lovely. What about the beauty industry?
Complex. So the beauty industry is for everyone. You know, and you will find your space in it, even if it's not obvious at the start. And I think that about everything really now. Mm-hmm. There's a space for everyone and there's a space for choice. And there hasn't always been, but there is mm-hmm. now. Mm-hmm. And also don't be permissive. Don't wait for people to accept you and include you. Own it.
Love that. What about urban gardening?
Oh, yeah, that's... that's just being in the moment, isn't it? You know, enjoying growing stuff. My gardening is terrible, but I'm a really enthusiastic gardener. Like, and I never have enough time to really do it properly. I throw myself in with gusto at the start and then forget to nurture on a daily basis, which is what you need to do. And then have great successes and then massive failures, but it's fine. So I think it's good for your health to garden, you know, like, especially around lockdown where, like, you weren't really going for long walks. You know, like, it's also important to, like, teach children how things grow, how food is grown. Bees, so I'm obsessed with things being pollinated and, you know. But, I mean, I'm not a great gardener. I'm not a successful gardener. But I am a gardener of kinds, yeah.
This has been amazing, and there were so many things that you've said that have just really stuck with me. It was a lovely conversation. I will let you get on with the rest of your day.
Thank you so much.
Have a lovely day. Bye.
Bye. Bye. Bye.